And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Jim Robinson. I got no quirky thing for you this week. I couldn't think of one.
I'm so disappointed.
Well, you know, sometimes life, you know, what's the saying? Lemon and lemonade. Sometimes life gives you. Sometimes life gives you lemons. You have. Sometimes you just got to make lemonade.
That's better than growing an onion and having to eat it.
Yeah. I'll agree with you on that one. Actually, you know what? It's funny. The lemon and lemonade. We talk about maybe being sour and sour pusses. How about that? We could talk about that.
where are we going? I don't know.
Well, let's see. It could be either A, the ending of the Tampa Bay game.
Oh, yeah. Ron James was a little upset.
Yeah. Or B, how sour the Cleveland offense was.
Yeah, that was pretty abysmal.
Or would there be?
Dude, if you're going to do A, B, you got to have a C.
I'm looking at a C. I'm trying to think of what. Was there one for the L.A. Kiss Jacksonville game?
Failure of the L.A. Kiss to score at the end of the first and second half.
Yes. Trifecta. If you bet that one, you win the trifecta.
Dude, I thought we were trying to be positive on this show. We just like knocked Portland down, L.A. down, and Cleveland down.
Well, see, that's my other podcast, and that's a whole other thing where it was just it was a sarcastic positivity. Yeah. Anyways, if anybody's asking, it's the Montreal Alouettes podcast that I do. I don't think you've mentioned it on the show. Anyways, it's Alouette's Flight Deck.
You have now.
I have now. It's in multiple places. If you like the CFL, you like the Alouettes.
Visit SoundCloud, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, etc.
But anyways, that's it. It's not that podcast. This is AFL Tonight. yeah.
I'll tell you what. You pick the game you want to start with, and we'll do all three first.
Let's talk about the first one, because you were there for one.
Yes.
We'll talk about the first game of the week, and it was one of the best matchups of the week that we talked when we previewed it last week. It was a nationally televised game. It's the last CBS it was the last national TV game for CBS for the regular season. It was a game that I will admit that I picked Portland to win, and then I happened to see the result, and it seemed I didn't really think it was a surprise, you know. You know, the only difference is that Tampa Bay came to play in this game, unlike when they were in Portland a few weeks back.
Not correct. Correct.
So it bodes well. I think it bodes well for Tampa. It just shows, though. Look at LA too. You know, west coming east is hard, just like east going west is hard. Also, but
it is. It is.
But overall, I mean, it was a pretty decent game. Besides, you know, Portland, you know, Shane Austin really didn't have that good of a game. Adam Kennedy was so-so. But I think what we need to talk about specifically is, first, Tampa Bay was up, I think it was at one point, 22 points, and almost blew the game.
That sounds right. Yeah, they came out of the set. They came out at halftime.
Yeah, it was 28-6. And 28-6 at one point.
The energy level seemed super low. It seemed like, I don't know how to explain it other than to say it seemed like they came out flat from halftime, mm-hmm. which is really odd. After watching and seeing how the first half went, you would think they'd be kind of geeked up and want to put the pedal to the metal, so to speak. They came out flat, and they let Portland come back into this game, and Portland did.
Yeah, and it took a last-second block to seal the win.
Yeah,
for Tampa.
Yeah,
but there's more to that, though. There's more to that, and that's something that you wanted to bring up. And you know, we've talked about it before. I know Adam in years past too has talked about it before when it comes to clock management, because you know we will basically call out anybody when we think that their clock management is utter garbage.
Well, this isn't so much.
This was different. This was slightly different. No, I would say this is almost
more about.
This is more
at the end of the game.
Yeah, this is sort of opposite. This is sort of opposite in a way. One coach did it right, and one coach
correct. Yeah.
But give a quick synopsis. Give a quick synopsis for those who didn't see the game on CBS.
Tampa Bay's up 41-40 with a little over 4 minutes to go. Adam Kennedy throws an interception. Ball's picked off. Portland gets the ball. I think it was about 4:01 left in the game.
Okay.
And it's not like they picked it off down at the goal line. They picked it off somewhere in the 15 to 20 yard range. So they don't have a long field to go. Both teams have three timeouts. And play kind of just plods along until the 1 minute mark. And
because the last score in the fourth quarter was at 6:32 by Portland.
Yes, yes. And so to bring it to the 41-40 mark score. And so play kind of just kind of plods along to the 1 minute mark. And both teams at that point have all their timeouts. And the spot is, I think, around the 17-20 yard line. I mean, if I pulled the game book up, I could tell you exactly. But people listening get the point of where the ball was in that range.
Yeah.
And so at that point, Portland does their plays, and Tampa Bay uses up all three of their timeouts before 30 seconds go off the clock.
Okay.
Now, some people would suggest that was poorly managed by Lawrence Samuels at that time. I would suggest otherwise. And the reason I would suggest otherwise is if he'd used any of those timeouts prior to the 1 minute mark, it would have given in effect more time and scenarios of options to the Portland offense.
Right.
At that point with 4 minutes left, you're just playing to hold them off, and he held them off to the 1 minute mark. And now the 1 minute mark in arena football, that's a game within a game on how you're going to handle it. And so they get their third timeout. Portland comes out and they take the snap, and Shane Austin takes the ball and he drops back about, I don't know, what is it, 3-4 yards somewhere from 12-11 yard line to the 15 yard line, takes a knee and kneels.
And by the way, first and foremost, that one thing was a little bit of a contention between people when it comes to, it's like, well, you can't kneel down. Well, yes, you can, and the clock will continue to run.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time, you know, as league rules mandate, if you are a team that is leading, you have to gain positive yards.
At that point,
Portland's behind by one.
Tampa Bay has already spent three timeouts, and Portland takes the knee. There's not much they can do at that point. They have no option. They can't elect. They've already saved. They already used their timeouts, trying to save time, trying to get the ball back. And if it was somewhere in the 30-second range at that point. Now, Portland elected, rather than to stop the clock, to let the time run down. And then let it run down to whatever it was, 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah, because it was Tampa Bay's last timeout was at 30 seconds. 32 seconds.
Okay. So the drop back, knee down, couple seconds running off the clock. Portland could stop the clock. They don't. That's their option, Portland's option, and they let it run all the way down. So
yeah, and that was third down at that point. It was third and goal at that point from the Tampa Bay 8.
And you start looking at it. I think there were even people on the Tampa Bay side that were wondering what Lawrence's actions were. And they were what they were supposed to be in that situation. He handled that the way you do in the last minute.
Right.
You can't control this for the 3 minutes prior other than having your team try to stop the other team,
mm-hmm,
and see how that goes. But now – you have Portland deciding, instead of taking this time on our clock and trying to make a play and trying to get to the end zone, we are now going to just, you know what? All the marbles. Come on. We're going to play shooter. Throw the marbles up against the wall and see what happens.
Yeah.
And they brought it down and they failed. The kick was blocked. It was a little low.
James McClinton put up his big fist.
Mm-hmm. He blocked the kick earlier in the game, and after the game, he said he had noticed what they were doing offensively on the kicks, and that he could get through. And this sounds kind of odd to say, but a lot of times on extra point attempts or field goals, it's kind of like, all right, I'm lining up against you. You're lining up against me. This is what I'm going to do. This is what you're going to do. Let's just do it. Getting our
3-point stance, and then at the hike of the ball, we just get up and basically hug.
Yeah, let's see what the kick does. Well, McClain didn't do that. He saw that he had an opportunity to shoot a gap, and he did. He got sideways and slid through. And he wasn't the only one that got through. But I think this was just a I wish I had the opportunity to sit down and talk to Coach James and ask him the thought process on this decision. It doesn't make sense to me.
Especially Coach James. There's not one that you would think that would do that. I mean,
with the opportunities that you have, the field position.
Okay, you have one more. And Shane Allison is a good quarterback. And look at his wide receivers that he has on that team.
Yeah, and particularly in the second half. I had mentioned last week that I thought the player that you had to keep an eye on was Nick Truesdale and what he could do.
Yep.
He was absolutely silent in the first half. Second half, at one point, he was 3 catches for 3 touchdowns for like 70-something yards. It was insane. It earned him Offensive Player of the Game by the media vote of those attending the game.
Yeah, he ended up having 4 receptions for 78 yards and 3 TDs.
Yeah, so I think that last reception was just a short, quick dump, but he was over 70 on the 3 receptions. And so I think that's what led the media at the game to go towards him. And for those wondering, the people that vote, the national broadcasters voted, the Tampa Bay radio voted, the Portland radio voted, and all the media in attendance voted. And it's really so when you see these awards, it's a collection of all of these votes. It's added up and majority rules. And right. So that's how this occurs. And but to see his domination, and they finally realized that they were able to take advantage of his size in the second half. And I don't know if I want to say finally recognized. Maybe the opportunities weren't there in the first half, but they adjusted at halftime to make the appropriate changes to put him in a position to perform. And I just question the end of the game there for Ron James and how he did it. I think he had some more opportunities to make plays, to do something, and he basically said, you know what, let's just kill this clock and bring it down. We're gonna decide this sucker on a field goal. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, field goals aren't a certainty.
No, and not in this league.
In leading up to that kick, you know, the kicker, he had missed, what was it, two extra points. One was blocked and one was missed.
Yep.
And so I just question that thought process. And for those listening, at questioning the end of the game for how Lawrence Samuels handled that, and I can understand some other games questioning those, but this one, he did what he had to do, and he performed that perfectly. I think the failure here was on Ron James and deciding to take that knee and not take a shot or make a play, and it didn't work out. Simple as that.
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Bottom line is, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, does it really matter? They're still the 7 and 8 seed, and it really wasn't going to flip at that point. It could flip this next week if Tampa Bay pulls an upset and Portland loses. But, you know, realistically, now that we're going back to the conference, they're still the 4 seeds in their conferences, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that to me was an interesting thing to watch, and it was an interesting thing to watch on the message boards as people talked about. Mm-hmm. and kind of how that conversation grew and evolved throughout list. It's not a list, but as you go through it.
Yeah, throughout the thread. No, it's – yeah, and it's – you know, it is – you go back, and it's funny. They may not have been in the situation – If Lakeo had not missed those 2 extra points, they would have been up by 1. It could have been a totally different situation. But you know what? Sometimes you have to have the Coach Kevin guy football mentality.
Yeah, you got to go step on their throat. And I think that at all times, I think that you got to do that. And this didn't happen. And I think – as much as there are some complaints for some things that went on during the game that Ron James might have,
right.
Ultimately, I think if he looks back at the decision making, he might do that differently.
Yeah. And, you know, but yeah, hey, it's Tampa Bay gets their second win and
the Big Mo. The Big Mo headed to the playoffs.
Yes, yes. Second game of the week, L.A. Jacksonville. We could just touch on this. We could touch on this quickly. We're talking about the main issue for the L.A. Kiss team, by the way. And if anybody first had noticed that Nathan Stanley went down.
Yes.
I do know from what I've understand he is day-to-day. There's been nothing that's come across the wire or a transaction wire saying that it's going to be any different from – but. To be fair, Pete Thomas coming in, and I put this on Twitter saying that if I had the chance to vote in the postseason awards, he would have been one of my top choices for Rookie of the Year. And I think I mentioned that last week too. I think
yeah, you did, yeah. And I agree with you. He's definitely in that conversation.
Yeah, but for LA, it was just a matter now of not being able to score with how you have the ball last. In the, not only the first half, but the second half.
Yeah, I think that's in a game that's tight, given back, you have to make the most of the situation at hand. And they had an opportunity at the end of the first half and the end of the game to score, and they didn't on either occasion.
Right.
And that's paramount. I talked to a lot of different people about the AFL and how it compares to the NFL. And one of the biggest things the NFL people don't understand, whether it's a player personnel guy or coach or front office person, is the going for on fourth down or not kicking, electing to kick a field goal and going for a touchdown. And the easiest explanation I have is in the NFL currently, it's more about positioning, field position.
That's right.
In the AFL, it's more about possessions. Mm-hmm. And here was an opportunity for the LA Kiss. They had possessions at the end of each half. And if they were able to convert these possessions, this game might have been a little different for them.
Oh, it's big. It obviously, and because if it can turn the game around in a heartbeat, which many fans do know, is that if you have the ball at the end of the first half and you get the ball to have it last, you know, that's why you've seen a multitude of times over and over again. That's usually where the multitude of onside kicks occurs, just so you can get the possession back.
Yeah, and I know we've seen some stats recently about teams that score in the final 30 seconds and then the other team getting the ball and what their conversion rate is. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it really is about that opportunity to come back. And by giving up a little, you get to an opportunity to come back. And I don't know if that squares with this LA Kiss game against Jacksonville exactly. But I think the point still remains. They had an opportunity there, and they weren't able to capitalize it. And I don't think in this situation you can really fault Pete Thomas. He had a pretty good game.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact, this game he completed the highest percentage of his passes all season. So he put the team in a position to compete, and it just didn't come through.
Yeah, he set career highs in attempts and in yardage. It's going to be an interesting choice for Coach Smith to decide who is going to go in the last week of the season.
You know, honestly, I think if
but also moving forward too into the playoffs, as I was, you know.
Yeah, I think if their starter's healthy, that's who they go with. And this isn't I don't think this is a question of the hot hand. I think it's more about Pete did his job and came in and did what he was supposed to do, but he's not the starter on the team. And that's not a knock on him. It's just I think that's where the situation is at the moment. And Omar's got to take this week of practice and look and see, you know, how his starter is moving around, if he feels he's comfortable enough with him moving forward.
Right. I think the one notable thing for Jacksonville was Coach Bob Lanzi's first win as a Jacksonville head coach.
Yes.
And it was at home, too. So, the new.
It's always good to win in front of the home crowd.
Yeah. the new, I don't, regime's not the right word to use, but do you know the new era, the Bob Lanzi interim coach era is currently on, and we'll see what happens in the offseason. If they're going to remove that, you know, an interim tag, and if he's going to be the permanent head coach. But that's for another day. The last game, which was the last ESPN game of the regular season.
This was pretty much, if you're a fan of the Lord of Rings, or not the Lord of Rings, I'm sorry. If you're a fan of the HBO show Game of Thrones, uh-huh. This was pretty much the Red Wedding.
Yeah. Okay, here's some positives that I'm trying to give for this one. Arizona set a record for margin of victory, a home record for margin of victory of 48 points. The old record was 47 points. What is funny, I think it was set back in 2005, I think, so I put on Twitter. And it was also against the Cleveland Gladiators, which is even funnier. One thing I thought it was something that hadn't happened as often as it had in the Arena Football League, but anybody noticed, and I'm sure you did too, is that that first score of the game was the safety.
I've seen that. I think that the interesting thing to me,
The stats, but continue through.
By the time that Arizona had completed their first offensive play, how many points they had?
9.
No, their next possession was a kickoff return for a touchdown.
That's right. So they already had 9 points. Yeah,
and then on their first offensive play.
Yeah, to Windsor. So it was 6. Yeah, so it was 15-0. Which, yeah. So I got the stats. As I said, I thought it was something that was not as frequent as it was, but. We were able to come up with a stat that safety, would you believe, because you and I didn't talk about this before the show, that was the 20th time since 2000 that the first score of the game was a safety.
Mm-hmm.
20th time since 2000. It was the third fastest safety since 2000 at 14:31 left in the first quarter.
And by the time they returned the kick, it was the bloodbath had begun.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So if anybody didn't get the reference, by the way, for Red Wedding, don't worry. I heard about the episode, didn't see the episode. I'm not a throner. I'm not a throner. I sit on the throne, but I'm not a throner. So what else? I mean, one of the weird things too is that, and I don't know the reasoning behind it. I mean, first you have Quentin Smith, who was out. He was deactivated for the game.
Yeah, Quentin Sims.
Quentin Sims. What are the things, Smith? Quentin Sims. Oh, because I was talking about Coach Smith before. And also, one thing, and I don't know if the reason why for this one, because it hasn't changed since, is that Brian Burkowski, who is a major part of their defense, was put on reserve.
Yeah, to be fair, Cleveland was missing some parts, but I think at the same time, as much progress as Arvell Nelson has made this season, each game, even as he progressed, there were still some parts of those games where you'd see.
Well, he collected all those parts, and it ended up showing.
Yes. Yeah, and that's not a knock on Arvell Nelson. I think
Coach Tom's had a
phenomenal job with him, and if they had a Most Improved Player of the Year award, that my vote would go to him. It doesn't happen collectively, but most people have at least one game like this during a season, and this was his game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with the win right now, Arizona, because of the win, they are.
They're the one seed in
the moment. Yeah, they're the one seed at the moment.
And depending on the final this weekend, because they have a bye week in week 18, if Philadelphia wins,
Philadelphia would end up becoming the two seed.
Yeah, so Arizona would keep the road open to hosting the Arena Bowl. If Orlando knocks off Philly.
In Glendale, by the way, for anybody who hadn't heard, it would be in Glendale, yes. not in Phoenix.
About 20 minutes up the road.
Yeah.
If Orlando wins.
Puts Orlando as the one seed and Arizona as the two.
Mm-hmm.
So the road to Arena Bowl 29 would go through Orlando.
Correct. And what's interesting about that is Orlando is going to have to go through. Philly or Orlando, however you want to phrase it, they're going to have to go through each other twice.
I know. I know.
Once now, and another one that, and it's really to determine which one has the home game later on.
I know. And for me, I mean, this is one thing I understand. Maybe I was hoping that maybe with the change that the league made, that they would have reseeded going into the conference final or something like that. Because I really like to. I understand the reason why, and I don't went into it in much detail last week. So if you didn't hear about it, you can listen to it. Listen to last week's episode. But you know, it gives Arizona a better a chance now at hosting Arena Bowl, whether they're in a one seed or not. But you know, we've seen stranger things happen in the playoffs. So you want to be healthy, and for sure, that's what Arizona's going to be. Cleveland too. But you know, when you give Nick Davila an extra week off to prepare, because they know they're going to be playing Portland.
Give Coach Guy a week off.
Yeah, to that one too. So, something. Speaking of playoffs, we found out earlier. I think it was yesterday, mid afternoon yesterday, that the LA Kiss are going to be hosting their first ever home playoff game in team history, which to me is a hell of an accomplishment. By the way, that it's going to be played in San Diego. I had to look up the arena. I could swear it was the old San Diego Sports Arena, and I was right. It's just not called the San Diego Sports Arena anymore.
Hey, well, nowadays it's hard to keep track of all the names.
Yeah. This one's – I don't remember. I have to go back and check again. I have to check the schedule and see what it's called. But, I mean, for you, I mean, it's Valley View Casino Center. That's what it's called now. You know, we've seen some people complain that, you know, this is one of the years where a lot of the home playoff games are not being played at home.
Yes.
As people may know, or they should know, is that it's not because of – sure, it's along the same lines of the situation that happened last year with the Arena Bowl and San Jose not being able to host. But, you know, it just so happens that, yes, it is the something else was booked. You know, Barnum & Bailey was booked at the Honda Center for L.A. It was booked, again, way in advance. And people need to understand this, too. It's like, you know, I've seen some comments where fans are going, well, it's, you know, they should have known. Well, no, they shouldn't have. Because when you are not a one or a, I would say not a one tenant, you're not the number one tenant, you're going to have to work around other people's schedules. And when you can have 6 or 7 days or however long the circus is going to be there at a guaranteed that they're going to be putting on the thing and you're going to be drawing people for those consecutive days, it's going to happen. You know, it just so happens, you know, we're talking about Arizona too. They're being bumped also for a WNBA game. And most people think that I would laugh. No, I'm not going to laugh at that. It's a WNBA game. I think it's a televised game for them too. Look at what has happened with a lot of these televised games. That's why, you know, Arena Bowl this year is on a Friday, right, Jim? So, and it is a set date because of television, just like last year's was a set date because of television.
Correct.
Sometimes
that plays a big part into it as well.
Oh, for sure.
Each of these arenas, they have multiple tenants, teams, functions, concerts, whatever, however you want to phrase it. That there's a metrics and how you move and shift. A lot of it has to do with your relationship from the team level with the arena and being able to work through some of these things. And the biggest thing is, it's not working through them, but being proactive and saying, here's our potential possibilities. And we need to find some way to come together to leave these available. And I think, you know, from team to team, that varies with their relationship with the arena and the venue on how that progresses. In LA's case, there really wasn't much they could do.
No, because that was booked. Honda Center was booked. They wanted to try to find something. I mean, sure, they could have looked at Las Vegas. They could have looked at, but you want to try to have something that is as close as possible, and you want to have it in a venue that you consider safe. You know, you don't want to have, I don't think you should have it at a convention center. I don't think, you know what I mean? It's
no. So if you're and
you can't go to San Jose, you can't go to Oakland.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go there. San Diego seems more a natural place. Yeah, be honest, I don't know. I've only been out that in that area a couple times. I don't know how the people feel about traveling and driving through the traffic. But that's their best option, and they took their best option and they presented it, and that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and you know, make the best of it. If it helps the market, that's good. I'm trying to remember. I think there's been was there a game before the San? Oh, don't tell me. No, that was Sacramento. Has there, besides the San Diego Riptide and AF2? Is this? What was the other game that was played there? Was it during the barnstorming season that a game was played in San Diego?
That's possible.
An AFL game.
But that would have been before the prior to the end of the Riptide. So
right. That's why I mentioned specifically the difference between, you know.
I honestly don't remember.
Let's see. Barnstorming was 89, right?
No. Let's see. The head coach
The barnstorming.
You're talking
season.
About the
barnstorming season was 89, wasn't it?
Which are you talking about, the traveling Thunder Bears?
No, I'm just talking about the barnstorming season period.
Oh,
of the AFL, where each team played at least just one home game.
Oh,
it was 89.
Yes, that was. I you know what? Honestly, Tim, I don't know. I'd have to pull up a book and look it up. I don't remember.
Okay.
Well, you know. You can't have an instant recall and everything.
No, and maybe this is the first ever game. Maybe this is the first ever game for San Diego. But I mean, if anybody can make it out there, and I've seen some people complain that it's at best from Anaheim, it's an hour and a half. You're coming from L.A. Obviously, I've never had to deal with L.A. traffic. I don't know if you have either. But they're calling. Yeah. You know, they're saying it's a bitch.
Well, recall it. I mean, you got to put it somewhere. I mean, I understand all the people complaining and that. They won the right to host the game, and their venue's not available. They got to find the most suitable replacement, and that seems to be it right now.
And by the way, yes, this will be the first ever AFL game played at the arena. The other two games was the San Diego Riptide. So. Should be interesting. Hopefully the silver turf will fit. I'm sure that's one of the things that they looked into.
That'll be interesting to see what happens there.
So at least they don't have to worry about bringing the stripper cages with them. So.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun. I mean, dancing girls. I'm sorry, dancing
girls. Go girls.
Okay. We had a question sent to us also this week. We're talking about, we're talking about our choices for if we had a chance to choose for players of the year. Somebody asked us a question where it was from Randy, and he wanted to know, how long do you think the duo of Nick Davila and Rod Windsor can last in the AFL if they both stay healthy?
I would say at least legitimately 4 more seasons, maybe 5. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that Davila would last longer than Rod Windsor, just purely to the nature of the position they play. Once you get up as a wide receiver, I think Rod Windsor would be able to change his game and still make an impact. I've seen that with other people. I saw Lawrence Samuels, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Storm right now.
Right.
Early in his career, he backed up George LaFrance and Stevie Thomas. And so he was not the primary receiver for a long portion of his career. And when he finally got the chance, he was already in his mid-30s. And he was able to excel and put up plus 100 reception seasons, plus 1,000-yard receptions. And so the ability is there. And if you look at these two right now, Rod Windsor and Nick Davila, if I'm correct, I think they're both 31. They were both born in 1985.
Yeah, they are. I was just checking that too. Yeah.
So from that standpoint, as long as they're willing to play and able to play, they've got years to go. And the interesting tidbit to me is, let's talk about Rod Windsor. Mm-hmm. And since I brought Lawrence Samuels up, we'll use that as a comparison. Lawrence transitioned his game as he grew older. Rod Windsor will be able to transition his game as he grew older. If you look at Lawrence's he got injured his last season with 2010, he got injured. But 2008, you look at his numbers, he was top 10 receiver in the league. There's no reason Rod Windsor can't continue to do that.
Yes. I'm sorry, I'm looking at Nick Davila's stats here. Yeah, no, yeah. I agree.
Now, will he be able to, like, hit his calling card now is he's not the biggest receiver. He's not as big as Joe Hill's. He's not able to do some of the things Joe Hill does. But he does some things because of his will and desire, and he's a playmaker.
He still has girth, though. Even though he's 6'2", 205, sometimes some of the stuff that he does, he's able to you've seen him bowl people over.
Yeah, he plays bigger than he is.
Yeah,
and that,
exactly.
That was the big thing. Like, there was a common theme with the Storm in 06, 07, 08. Third and whatever, mm-hmm. throw it to Lawrence.
Yeah.
Throw a stack route. He'll catch the ball and run somebody over and get an extra 3 or 4 yards. Rod Windsor can do that. He can do it now, mm-hmm. and he will do that until he decides not to play.
By the way, you mentioned in 08.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't playing in the Arena League in 08.
No, Lawrence Samuels. Oh, I was talking about Lawrence Samuels.
Oh, you're talking about Lawrence Samuels at the time. Okay, in 08. Okay.
Yeah, because he compares favorably in size and stature.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood you. Okay.
How Lawrence Samuels played.
Yeah.
And so he can have success. Davila can as well because, we've seen it recently with Aaron Garcia. Aaron Garcia, the ageless wonder.
Well, he played forever.
Put huge numbers.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for a quarterback that has longevity, the ability to read the game, to see players, to see where defenders are set up, knowing what play is called, and knowing where to go. And he knows that, and he knows where to go with the ball. And so if I had to guess, it health-wise, and if they want to continue playing, I would guess Davila would play longer, but together – if they want to continue to play 5 or 6 years, I can see that. And I can see them breaking numerous records.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny. Of all the receivers that, you look at Mo Purify, he's the one who, unfortunately, has been hurt the most. Because it's like a dual threat, though, between these two. But longevity's sake, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you look at some of the best wide receiving duos in league history. Obviously, these two guys are up there as one of them. And it is all about longevity and how good your team is, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah, and barring injury, there's no reason Rod can't, if he wants to, he can go 5 or 6. He could go longer than that, but I can see 5 more years at this same type of level of at least reaching 120 receptions, mm-hmm. 1,400 yards, 20-plus touchdowns. Davila, I mean, staying healthy, he still has the passion to keep going. I think he could go longer and put up even bigger numbers.
Right. It is very possible that if Davila continues to play how he is, that he will shatter. He could shatter the TD record.
Yeah. Not only that, but Rod Windsor would probably shatter TT Tolliver's records, all the records he set this season. Now, I will say, giving a little history lesson, Rod didn't start off his career as a defensive specialist like TT. And I only say that to enlighten people to this magnitude of what he's been able to do over his career. But if Rod's able to do that, not only God bless him and more power to him, but that would be phenomenal. That's what you need. As the league moves forward and tries to grow, you need players like this, and you need someone to pick up that baton from somebody else and carry it forward. And Rod could be one of those guys to do that.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats here. He's currently Rod Woods is currently ninth overall in league history in career TDs. He's funny for his receiving yards. He's not in the top 20 yet, which I found a little
interesting.
Yeah.
No.
I'm wrong. I'm wrong. He's 11th. I was looking at
something else. It all depends on the offense you're in.
Yeah, he's 11th. So he is.
Well, that's close enough. You know, it depends on the offense you're in and how they run things. And are you an intermediate threat? Are you a short threat? And the thing that Rod has going for him is he can take it long. He can take he's phenomenal at the intermediate routes and the short routes because he's so physical and he's willing and able to run over a defender and run through a defender.
Yes, for sure. For sure. One more thing before we start talking about this week's games. This is going to be Donovan Morgan's last regular season game in his career.
That's a shame. I remember his first.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Obviously,
in particular, I remember a game played against the Tampa Bay Storm. She caught 7 passes, and 5 of them went for touchdowns, and I don't think he eclipsed 70 yards. I voted for him for player of the game. It was an immense performance. It wasn't just the routes. He ran nice, very nice routes. It was just the ability to get his hands up and snatch the ball out of the air. And the routes he ran, he wasn't really particularly open on any of them. And it was just, I don't know how else better to say it than it was a supremely phenomenal performance.
If possible, because we saw how we talked, maybe if possible, if we can work something out, I think we'll see if we can get an interview with Donovan to
that'd be great
to talk about his career, what he thinks about the league as a player, and what he's going to be doing going forward.
I'd like to ask him what he thinks about Larry Brackens being called Pearl River and not him.
We'll let him answer that question.
Let him answer that.
Yeah. So, you know, LA fans or fans who have been watching him, whether you saw him in Philly or Chicago, I mean, most people forget that he played in Tulsa, New Orleans in 2013. Take note. Watch, if you have a chance, watch the game this week. And then obviously with the playoff game, it'll be in San Diego, but, you know, that'll be his, possibly his last postseason game in his career, but, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Well, on that level, some other things to look to is Joe Hills. If he can get 6 touchdown receptions this weekend, he'll match Damien Harrell. And then T.T. Tolliver is now over 300 career touchdown receptions. And you look at where he is overall, purpose career touchdowns, he's moving up that chart.
Yeah. Should be interesting. I don't know. Odds-wise, it's going to be tough for Joe Hills to get that record.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. If you looked at what was sent out today by the league, Spider-Man Jackson, he did not participate in practice today. And Reggie Gray, although being activated from inactive reserve yesterday, was listed today as being on inactive reserve.
Right.
So we'll see what happens there. You know, that might limit the options and present an opportunity for Joe Hills. And not only that, you asked me about this last week. They're playing Tampa Bay this week. Mm-hmm. And last week when you asked me about that, I talked about the impact Nick Truesdale might have,
right,
because of his size. And Joe Hills is bigger than Nick Truesdale, and I think he's a better receiver than Nick Truesdale. And so there's going to be opportunities to be had to get that. It's just a matter of can Jacksonville be proficient enough on offense to move the ball quick enough and fast enough to get enough opportunities to score those touchdowns.
Right. We've seen him do 8 touchdown games, so it is very possible. We'll just have to – to see what happens, and you know, it's not one of the best games this week, but it's still something to watch if you are a league fan and if you are obviously a Jacksonville Sharks fan. We have last week of the season, regular season. We're already there.
No, I can't.
I mean, it's nuts already. We're already thinking about the playoffs and Arena Bowl. If anybody didn't remember, or because I know you and I were talking about this prior, that the game in Jacksonville is actually on Saturday.
Yes, make sure you know that.
Okay, it's Saturday. It's 7 o'clock. It was only announced. We went back and double checked. It was only announced mid July.
I think it's a 7:23 kickoff.
Yes, even though it says 7 o'clock on the tickets.
It'll kick off at 7:23.
Actually, probably says 5 p.m. on Sunday on the tickets. But three games: Arizona and Cleveland's regular season is done. They are waiting. Obviously, Cleveland and Arizona know who their playoff opponents are going to be. Tampa Bay, Jacksonville. I mean,
it's a game to be played.
Yes. But I think there's still some things. As I said, you go into this game. We got Joe Hills. He has more than one streak, one type of thing that he's trying to continue his consecutive games touchdown streak. He is trying to tie or surpass Damien Harrell for most receiving touchdowns in a season. TT is finishing up one hell of a regular season when it comes to the three major awards that he has broken this year. So
moving up the all time purpose and all-time receiving TD list, above 300.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, it's a look forward to 2017 regular season-wise, because we still have the postseason to go. But, Jacksonville still does not know who they're going to be playing next week.
No, and they won't. They won't because they play prior to the Philly-Orlando game. Which we'll get to.
Yeah, so almost the same time, almost same kickoff. So, they have to try to stay healthy, play as well as they can. I mean, Tampa Bay, showed some surprise last week. But, even though Jacksonville has been an up-and-down team all year, I still think, Jacksonville won the last three. They've won the last six out of nine.
What's Massey have them?
Massey has the game at... This is what I was very surprised about. Massey has him at a minus 25.5 point favorite. So at a 25.5 point favorite.
Ooh.
Yeah, no kidding. Five Dimes has him at a 23.5 point favorite.
Hmm.
With an over-under of 97 points. So do the math. Oh, my God.
Now, do the math.
Yeah, but do the math on that one.
Let's look at recent Tampa Bay Storm transactions.
Yes.
And see if this adds up.
Yes.
So, Jason Boltis,
yep.
In active reserve.
Yeah, as of last, that was something that was done last week.
Last week. Adam Kennedy. Suspension.
Yeah, that was on Monday.
Mm-hmm. That leaves us with Warren Smith.
Who was just picked up last week.
Who I think could be a capable quarterback, but he's going to be thrown into the fire.
It looks so, because as of the taping of this show... Tampa Bay has not done any more. It doesn't look like they've brought in anybody else or thinking of bringing. I mean, there are others that have played for the Storm this year.
No, that's all the quarterbacks on the roster right now.
Yep. So at the moment, the question is: A, is Boltz going to come off reserve? If not, who is going to be the backup quarterback? Because you would know this. At one point, does TT have any quarterbacking experience? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, actually TT does. He was his senior year of high school, he was the quarterback on his team. I want to say he was Mr. Football. I don't know if that's accurate. There's a couple other guys on the team that are quarterbacks in high school. Number 17 who came from the CFL.
Billy Parker.
Billy Parker. No, the kick returner, Kendrick Ings.
Oh, Kendrick Ings.
Yeah, he was a high school quarterback. They actually had a couple other guys that were quarterbacks as well. I don't know who would fulfill that final role.
Yeah, if our stats are correct for TT, his last pass was done back in 2012 when he was with Orlando, and then prior to that it was with 2006 with Nashville.
Yeah, and I gotta assume those were gimmick plays, not to dismiss them, but, you know, gimmick plays nonetheless. I can't imagine any situation in which they're going to put TT behind quarter the center.
Well, no, I guess I said depending on, you know, we don't want Warren Smith to get hurt, but I'm saying if that does happen.
Well, we're going to have to wait and see when they activate Jason Boltis, if they do.
Yeah, we'll find out. So keep at his storm.
Or if they sign another quarterback.
Yeah.
And if they sign another quarterback, you know for sure it's going to be Warren Smith starting.
You would need somebody who had some arena experience at least.
Mm-hmm.
So, but 25 points, yeah, it's possible. It's possible. It's, I know you don't pick Tampa Bay games again. I think I thought the 25 points or 23 points is a tad high, but I still think Jacksonville will win this game, and they'll take the momentum, their momentum, into their a road game in the playoffs. You know, we'll leave the last game. We'll talk about the Monday game first, okay? And we'll leave the best to last.
I concur.
Monday, L.A. travels to Portland. Portland coming off of a, obviously, that last-second loss to Tampa Bay with a blocked field goal. Two teams, as we mentioned earlier in the show, two teams that had some issues in both their games, sort of brain farts in their games. But for L.A., it's just a matter of who's going to start. Is it going to be Pete Thomas, the pure rookie quarterback, or is it going to be Nathan Stanley? That could be big, in my opinion, going into the playoffs, especially for the Kiss, because they do have that home playoff game. Portland.
I think I agree with that sentiment that it's big moving forward into the playoffs. But for this particular game, I don't think it makes much of a difference which one of them goes.
You think they may go halvesies? Is it possible to think Coach Smith would actually go half-half just to make sure that both quarterbacks have some reps?
I don't know if he'll do that or not. But in the grand scheme of things, for Omar Smith and the LA Kiss, I don't think it matters which quarterback starts this game. I think you put the quarterback that's most ready to go, and you're working towards that first playoff game.
Right. And for Portland coming in, and I think it's just a matter of – it's been a tough regular season for Portland. I think it's just a matter of getting through this and giving props to the, you know, to the fans in Portland who had such a rough year when it came to the issues with home games and stuff like that. So it's but going, I think LA has them. I think LA will have the momentum going into their game, their home playoff versus Cleveland. So I think I'm going to give LA the upper hand on this one. Massey has LA favored by 6.5 points. Five Dimes has LA favored by 7.5 points, and over under that's also a 97. Massey was a little low.
I'd say take LA.
And finally, nice to be able to end on a game. And you remember, all games this week are going to be on ESPN3. I think the plus is that if you are in the Philadelphia area, this game is also going to be broadcast on the Comcast network. Looks like it's going to be live.
Which means Comcast will also share it with other markets. It's just not known which ones yet.
Right. And I'm also hoping, too, if that's the case, then it won't be the ESPN3 feed in Orlando. It will be the actual Comcast feed.
But that would be nice. That would be
that
very
would be nice. That, for that type of game, to have an act, to have a play-by-play, that would be nice. I'd like that. Now, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, there is a lot riding on this one game.
There is.
A lot riding. Now,
pole position, baby. Pole position.
That's right. Just to get the small stuff out of the way, Philadelphia leads the overall series at 14-4. That's the game is, how many times has Philadelphia won in Orlando? Two out of the last three. Three out of the last four. Four out of the last five. Four out of the last five that at Philadelphia has won in Orlando. But Orlando was able to pull off a win, if everybody remembers, back in June, so by three points. Now,
well, the big takeaway from this game is,
by the way, hold on. Massey has Philadelphia at favored by 1.5. Five Dimes has Philadelphia favored by 7 with an over-under of 112.5.
That's interesting. That's a big disparity. Well, let's start with the obvious. If Philadelphia wins versus an Orlando win, what that means to the playoff structure.
With a Philadelphia win?
Yeah.
Okay. I know we mentioned, but we'll go over it again. With a Philadelphia win, Philadelphia clinches the number one seed and wins the division/conference regular season title. And Arizona will get the number one seed, and the road to Arena Bowl will go through Arizona.
And if Orlando wins,
that gives them not only the regular season title for the conference and the division, it will also give Orlando the number one seed, keeping Arizona at number two, and the Arena Bowl, road to Arena Bowl, will go through Orlando.
So, a monumental game.
Huge.
Huge. And this game is going to come down to matchups.
Yes.
How the coaches look at their rosters, and they look at their playbook, and how their players perform, and how they match up against the other team. And to ask you, Tim, what do you think would be the key matchup in this game?
Huh. Well, you look at the stats themselves. I mean, points allowed, Philadelphia is favored. Philadelphia is giving up less points per game by 0.2. 0.2. That's crazy. So 47.6 to 47.8. I really think, to me, it's going to be Bernard Morris versus the Philadelphia defense. He is such a double threat, in my opinion. Obviously, he's known as he can throw, but he is also having that double threat where he can use his legs. Just look at his stats when it comes to his rushing.
I'll give you one step further. This game is going to come down to Joe Goosby and his ability to spy and contain Bernard Morris.
Okay.
That's what I think this game comes down to.
So either way, we're both saying Bernard Morris is part of the equation, the big big matchups.
Correct. I think the key is, I think if you go back and you look at film from their previous matchup, Joe Goosby has had the ability to spy Bernard Morris fairly well. If you go, and you now take that another step and you look at when Bernard Morris has good games, those are games in which he seems to be able. It's not about his passing; it's about his ability to get into a rhythm, and a big part of that is getting his legs going. And I think that settles him down a good bit,
right?
And then he's able to use his arm.
Okay. Yeah.
So if Philly defensively can disrupt him or stop him from getting him being Bernard Morris from going early, and Joe Goosby is able to do a good job of spying him while making sure his defensive responsibilities in the front side or the back side of the flats are covered primarily, that bodes well for Philadelphia. And I think that's for fans watching the game, that's the thing. If you want to, as you watch, see, oh, which way is this game going? What am I thinking? If you pay attention to that, I think that will be the telltale sign.
Bernard Morris on the year is 33 rushes for 144 yards and seven touchdowns. What's funny, by the way, Jim, is that Randy Hippard, before he got hurt, he was also leading the team. He has seven touchdowns.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's not to take anything away from Randy in the mobility, but Bernard is a much better runner and quicker and more agile than Randy. And I don't think anyone would dispute that.
Right, no, that's yes.
But for Bernard, if he can get going early, and you look back at his career in games in which he's able to get going early, he finds a much greater success.
Right.
And I didn't chart this, so I can't give you numbers. This is just really more an eyeball test, watching game after game after game. So for Philadelphia, the key is to prevent Bernard from making plays with his legs, force him to make plays with his arms, and let Joe Goosby shadow him and shut him down. If Philadelphia can do that, they get the top seed in their conference. If not, it goes to Orlando.
I think also one of the other big things, which I think, which may be the actual one of the bigger factors too in this game, is going to be Brandon Tompkins.
Yeah, Brandon Tompkins. I also want to say, I would like to say Greg Carr with his size.
Well, I'll talk about returning. I think returning will probably be a huge thing.
Yes, overall impact on the game, return, because he impacts so many phases of the game, whether it's the run game, the pass game, or the return game. You're absolutely correct.
So it should be interesting. I mean, you got two major receivers. Both of them have over 1,000 yards this year receiving, Brandon Tompkins and Greg Carr. Brandon Tompkins is, if I were to have the vote, he would be in the line for some of the major awards this year. It's interesting. You know, I think the main thing too is that Philadelphia needs to make sure that they do not start off slow. Yes, it's a de facto home game for the Philadelphia Soul, but the game is in Allentown. So this game is probably one of the hardest games I've ever had to pick, I think, all year.
No, that's a valid point. You know, home game, really not at home. Bottom line, I like Philly in this game. I think the biggest question is the mental mindset that they come into the game
with. I'm sorry. The game's at Orlando. Idiot capper. The game's at Orlando.
Regardless, I think for Philadelphia, the mindset they come into the game with, Dozell will have that team prepared. And Radabaugh, he works tirelessly. Will he be able to come into this game and block out all the, I don't know, what do you want to call it, riffraff, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. hubbubub, or whatever, however you want to say it. If he can do that and move that offense like he can, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, against the Tampa Bay Storm, you know, he had some issues. He was overthrowing some guys, throwing them wide, throwing them short.
He also had his almost perfect week.
Mm-hmm. And they still came out with the win. That's the Radaball they can't have against Orlando. Orlando has some edge rushers with, like, Cato Bishop that can go in and disrupt him. You know, he's an all-arena performer. And their defensive backfield for Orlando, they've got some all-arena performers back there as well. So he's got to be on his game. Mm-hmm. And if he comes in sharp, Philly should take this game. And they should take this game by about 10 points.
Wow. I'm just looking at all the different matchups, too. And I think it's, you know, Richardson is a huge factor. 304 yards, 20 touchdowns.
I think the bigger factor for him is his ability to block William McGinnis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that last week. Yeah, you mentioned that about the blocking last week.
Yeah, if he's able to stymie William McGinnis, that bodes well for the Philadelphia offense. Yeah. And so maybe that, secondly, as far as matchups go, that might be the next one to look at. Is what can they do, Orlando, pass rush wise against the Philadelphia offensive line, and in particular, McGinnis matching up against Jeremy Richardson.
Right. Look at Darius Reynolds, SK, Ryan McDaniel. They all have over 1,000 yards on the year.
That's got to be only the fifth or sixth time in league history three receivers over 1,000 yards.
Just make. I'm still
off the top of my head.
I've pick them in my head. I see who Philadelphia, the line's going towards, and you know what? I'm giving a slight edge to Orlando.
Okay.
A slight edge to Orlando.
Why?
Well, I'm looking at everything they have. I mean, considering that they're on their backup quarterback, they've been able to get through all the adversity that they have. I just think, you know, besides rushing, I think Orlando has the entire package.
Okay.
And okay. I would not be surprised, you know, this is just cliche maybe, that it would be a special teams return.
Well, it's interesting you bring up special teams, because if you look at these teams, these are two of more of the top teams in the league, special teams-wise.
Yeah.
And so I've said, first off, I think the key of the game is Goosby and spying the quarterback for Orlando. And then secondly, Richardson blocking. thirdly, special teams, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Are they able to maintain that? Are they able to prevent – not even prevent. Let's start all over. Play it solid. Do things like you're supposed to do on onside kicks, kicking them or receiving them. Receiving them, batting it over the wall. Receiving onside kicks, going to the right guy. Or straight up, a regular kickoff, the ability to contain Tompkins. So, yeah, I'd say it, 1, 2, 3, you're watching this game, those are the three things to look at. Because realistically, those the kickers, the two kickers in this game are the top two kickers in the league this year.
And I wasn't going to say Orlando was going to win by a special teams and a missed extra point. It's like no. I'm not going to. I don't want to go that way. So,
what's really interesting is you have two coaches too that also they don't mind gambling a little bit and
it's true
onside kicking in unusual situations. Mm-hmm. So this for fans, this could be a really fun game to watch and see how this unfolds.
Yeah. Should be interesting. Should be a very interesting game. Let us know what you guys think for what the matchups are going to be. You know there are multiple ways you can let us know. You can head over to the message boards over at arenafan.com. You can chime in. Send us a message over at our Facebook page. Do not forget we're also on social media on Twitter. Send it via that way to us. Listen to any of the podcasts from this year on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play Music. Periscope, we're going to ramp up a little bit more coming up for the playoffs and Arena Bowl. And if you want to email me any comments or whatnot, you can do so at tim.capper@arenafan.com. So we've come to the end of the regular season, Jim. It should be very interesting to see what comes of it. And we'll obviously next week we will start the road. The funny season. The postseason.
The road to Arena Bowl.
The road to Arena Bowl 29. So for everybody here at AFL tonight, for Jim Robinson, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.
Deuces.